Today is a transition Sunday. It's an in-between Sunday because in this coming week, we will journey as a church from the season of Epiphany, post-Christmas, all excitement and trying to keep the joy during winter into this more somber and reflective season of Lent. And transition is never easy. We can see that in this story from 2 Kings today. And we're staying focused on the Hebrew scriptures, the Old Testament, because I think this is such an important story for journeying into the season of Lent, for making this transition. Transition is really, really hard. I thought just this week about that because I saw that my father had posted on Facebook a photo of a for sale sign in front of my childhood home that they've lived in for like 25 years. And I knew this was coming, that they're planning to downsize, and this is a very wise and necessary thing that they're doing, moving out of this home. I knew it was coming, I've been involved, and yet it still brought a lump to my throat. It's just hard to think of saying goodbye, making room for something new, making this change. It was hard. And this today is a similarly glorious story of something good that had to happen, but something really tough between Elijah and Elisha. Don't let the names confuse you the way they sometimes confuse me. These are two very different men. Elijah is one of the most revered prophets of all Jewish history and Christian history, so much so that Jewish people actually leave a seat open at their tables as a tradition to make room for Elijah should he come back during their meal. They leave a space for him. And he had been the one the prophet called to challenge the thrones of corrupt power like King Ahab. He had won this great and fiery contest between his God, our God, and the 850 prophets of the idol Baal. He had won this contest for God, but it had made him, Elijah, some very powerful enemies. So his life was even in danger. And when his life was in danger, that was when God called to him and said, "Not only do you still have work to do, but I'm going to ask you to take this kid under your wing, Elisha, to mentor him, to come after you." So he did that, and the two of them became inseparable. But then abruptly we get to this story in 2 Kings, and we're told God is planning to take Elijah away, up to heaven, in a whirlwind. It's a beautiful and glorious thing. Sure, the idea of going to heaven in a whirlwind, not having to age or die, just being taken. But this was a really, really hard transition for Elisha, because this man had become more than just a boss or a teacher to him. He had been like a friend and a father. And the idea of having to say goodbye meant saying goodbye to everything that represented what he wanted to become. This man he looked up to so much. And we all can relate that we've had probably people we've had to say goodbye to, and we couldn't imagine life without them. So we would do anything to put off that goodbye. And it's interesting in this story, you heard that repetition. I think it's so funny that this huge miracle of whirlwinds and chariots of fire is glossed over in just a couple of lines. But what is given so much attention is this long, painful goodbye between these two friends. That's what's given attention. Elisha just will not leave Elijah alone. He tries to shake him, but Elisha just cannot say goodbye. And I can almost hear him, his bitter response to all those prophets along the way when they remind him, "Elijah's going to be taken from you today." I can almost hear him going, I know, shut up about it." That's my modern translation. But really, he did not want to hear that. Elijah takes Elisha to all these amazingly historic landmark sites for the nation of Israel, and he keeps trying to say, "I'm going to go on without you." But Elisha will not leave him. It reminds me how, it reminds me how when we are losing somebody that we love, maybe not even to death, but like if someone is moving away who's been our neighbor for a long time, or maybe somebody's retiring and we've worked with them every day, somebody we have to say goodbye to, we always say this phrase, don't you? "This isn't goodbye." Don't we say that? "This isn't goodbye." We can't stand for it to be goodbye. We can't stand the thought of having to go on without that person. And I think that was the issue for Elisha too. It wasn't just that he was going to miss Elijah, but for him, he knew, I'm the one coming after him. How can I go on without him? I'm not ready yet. He was going to be left all on his own to start over. And so Elisha makes this bold request of Elijah. He asks Elijah for a double portion of his spirit. And I really like that gumption. He says, I like what you have, so give it to me and make it a double. And that's not a greedy or an arrogant request. That's not him saying, oh, give me all the money of the inheritance. Give me everything you own. This was Elisha speaking out of uncertainty, out of fear. He knows he's following in Elijah's footsteps, and he needs to know that he's going to be okay. And so this is what he asked for. And Elijah cannot promise him that. He cannot promise he'll get this double portion of his spirit. But he tells him, keep your eyes open. Watch what God will do, and if you see it, it will come true. So Elisha does see something. He sees something grand. And it says he kept watching, and he cries out this weird thing. It's a weird thing to say when someone is leaving you. Oh, Father, Father, the chariots of Israel and their horsemen. That's not probably something you've said on anybody's deathbed or when they leave to retire. But he says this because he sees this grand sight, and I think there's a deeper meaning here. Some people get caught up in this story and wondering, how could anyone believe this thing actually happened? It's too crazy. But I think we miss the point with these miracle stories if we focus on whether they actually historically happened. There was a message for Elisha here and a message for us. The way that Elijah is taken to heaven, these chariots and horsemen and fire, I think it's meant to tell us something. That the chariots and tanks, the horsemen and nuclear weapons, all these things in the world that symbolize might and power, they don't mean anything in God's kingdom. They're not the things that are going to protect us. Psalm 33 says, a king is not saved by his mighty army. And it's easy for us in times of fear and trouble and transition to lean harder on those things that look like strength. To build up our weapons, to buy a gun for the house, to start building up a stockpile and protect ourselves and lock the doors, to lean on trappings of strength because we're afraid, because times are changing. But the message, I think, is those things cannot secure our future. What God has in the way of strength is so much stronger, and Elisha gets that. He watched for what God would do, and he got this big goodbye. He saw this grand thing. And I like the way one pastor put it, that Elisha now sees his task is not one of holding on, it's one of carrying on. So sometimes when things are changing, we just want to hold on so tight, and maybe the task is to let go and carry on. For us, it seems like transition that's really, really hard may involve letting go of people, like Elisha did. But it also, when we start looking at a season like Lent, transition also might involve letting go of our will, letting go of the things that we want, our way of doing things, our need to have things turn out just the way we want them to. And there's one last thing that Elisha has to do. He has to pick up that mantle. This is the story where we get that phrase in common vernacular, even in politics, of passing the mantle of leadership. It comes from this story. And literally all that a mantle was just like a shawl or a cloak, like a scarf. We probably imagine it as some great scepter or something, but it was just a shawl, and it had fallen off of Elijah's shoulders when he went up to heaven. But we know it's more than just some lost and found item of clothing. It represented this leadership role that Elisha had to pick up and take on and put on himself. It had to be picked up, and Elisha does pick it up. But when he picks it up, he also asks this great question, where is the Lord, the God of Elijah? Where is the Lord, the God of Elijah? And with that question, he dips this shawl, this mantle, into the River Jordan. And behold, it parts for him, same way it parted for his master. It parted for him. So the water parting answered that question. The God of Elijah is still with him. Elijah was gone. But God had never gone anywhere in the transition. All these changes in our lives that are so scary, God is the one that does not leave, that does not change. So Elisha was testing the power of his own faith, asking that question, dipping this into the water. And it's no accident that on all these journeys, Elisha had to cross back through the Jordan River to get home and continue this work. Because historically and biblically, the Jordan River represented all these tests and challenges and trials the people had gone through. It's in the water that was all the people's fear, all their excuses and hesitations and staying put. You remember, even when the people of Israel were first freed from slavery, they had to cross through water. They had to cross through the river to get to the promised land. And they'd been wandering for so long by that point that some of them even thought, maybe slavery is better than this. I'm too afraid. Maybe it's better to just be a slave and do what we've always done. And that's how we get. We're so afraid of transition that we would rather stick back with something that's terrible than take the risk of something new. So that Jordan River was all that had to be crossed through and overcome. So for each one of us today, our lives, what is our Jordan River? What do we have to cross through to get to something new God is trying to make us experience? What is our Jordan River? And what is our mantle to be picked up? Let me flesh that out a little more for you, because I really think in this new year, so many changes. Some of you really need to think about this today with me. Many of us look before us and we see something that just seems impossible. It seems too big, too scary. We feel too drained or too alone. And we just want to crawl under the covers and hide until something else comes along. Let the chariots and horsemen come and whisk us away past this stretching, growing time and into a time that's easier, right? Wouldn't a lot of us rather run and hide than try to do this next thing? But instead, we feel left on our own, on the cusp of something. We know in our hearts we're called to take on this relationship or this task or this commitment, something in our lives. We're called to take on this mantle before us, and it's ready for us to pick up. There's an old clergyman from the 19th century named Phillips Brooks who has a really cool quote that I love. He says, "Do not pray for easy lives. Pray to be stronger men and women. Do not pray for tasks equal to your powers. Pray for powers equal to your tasks. So then the doing of your work shall not be the miracle. You shall be the miracle. You shall be the miracle." So wasn't it just as much of a miracle that Elisha could carry on and take on this huge role? That was a miracle just as much as parting the waters and these chariots and horsemen. Because that's hard to do. And what I said before isn't entirely true anyway. We might feel left on our own, but we're not left on our own. We are not left alone. God has never left us. We might ask that question, where is the Lord, the God of Elijah? And asking that maybe is similar to us asking, where is the God of that friend that I loved that died of cancer when other people seemed to beat it? Where is the Lord, the God of my parents who disappeared into dementia? Where is the Lord, the God of that kid that used to love to give me hugs and sit in my lap and now I don't recognize them? They don't want to sit with me anymore. Or even in the church, where is the God of all these revered saints in the church that have gone before us? Where's the God of Lynn Whitney and Mary Martin and Hal Boyd? These people who are remembered here, who had such strong faith. Where's that God? Is he still here? We ask questions like that. That God is the same God who's still with us, standing on the shoreline of something new, waiting for us to pick up this mantle. It's the same God whose presence never changes, yet he has the power to change our lives, our families, and most miraculously, he has the power to change our stubborn, fearful selves. There's another more contemporary pastor named Jan Richardson. She's still living now, and she's also a poet and an artist, and she wrote this great poem that I'll close us with today that's very aptly called The Blessing of Elijah. It says, make no mistake, this blessing that comes like hands laid upon your head, a mantle draped across your shoulders, you do not bear it alone. Think of it as lineage, as litany, an ancient legacy entwining you among the strands that weave through generations and centuries, that spiral with the enduring and determined grace of the story that has seized you. Take heart that this blessing comes to you singed and scorched, signed by the blazing of wonders you can barely imagine, and by trials that have already tested you, or you would not have found your way this far. Lay it down, and it will be a path for you across terrain you never imagined daring to cross. Take it up and know the presence of those who have passed this on to you, who encompass you, who go with you, and release you into the keeping of the road that is your own and the one who has called your name.